Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. You are listening to the only show that gives you the most important information necessary in getting the federal alliance. If we, in life, if we're not in compliance, then the universe goes astray, if you know what I mean. What ends up happening if you start failing? As a matter of fact, I'll give you a better one. Before I go down some really weird tangent, let me go down this other weird tangent. I was having a conversation with a leader in the Constitution Party, and we were talking about the ideologies of subjugation and liberty. And I was explaining to this fine gentleman that the ideologies of liberty and subjugation have been around since Adam and Eve, these two opposing ideologies. Now, I've told you before, in the wiring of the ideology of liberty, there is a balance because liberty does not try to root out and compel people not to think a certain way or destroy people for thinking a certain way. In other words, they understand that you have to have a negative and a positive. But you don't have to let everybody have a control on the narrative to allow them on the negative side to dominate the positive, because then you have an unnatural imbalance. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to have even, but in all honesty, when you put all the cards on the table, and with the premise that I always use, reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. And I believe the majority of the people living on the face of the earth today are reasonable. You have your outliers. Those are the people that will not understand, regardless of how you explain it to them. They refuse to see it any other way than the way they want to see it. And they believe that the ends justify the means. Whatever they need to do, just as I read that Billy Graham, The Commitment. If you understand the ideology of the left, they don't care if you have to die. On the other side, the side of liberty, what we call the right, they don't want to kill people. They want them to get equally informed so they can finally go, aha, I get it. And that's where we make a big mistake. We have to understand that they will never get it. See, the framers, and actually this came up as well this weekend, the framers really understood that the loyalists to Britain were going to be loyal and they were going to be enemies throughout the time. They would work to undermine our republic from within. So what did they do when they won the war? When the framers won the war, they kicked out the loyalists. The British loyalists were actually kicked out. They were put on ships and sent back to Britain or Europe, wherever they wanted to take their sorry butts. But the bottom line is, as I was explaining to this gentleman, that this ideology goes way, way, way back. And so people want to understand, you know, why we have these problems. We have these problems because there are people that just don't care if their problems get in your way. It is their path forward. And I can't make it any more simpler than that. They will do anything necessary. The ends justify the means. They'll do anything necessary to obtain their goals. At the cost of your life, at the cost of everybody's liberty, it does not matter. It's kind of like, you know, those bad movies you see where somebody's willing to, you know, blow everybody away just so they can have their way. Long story short, I had this very, I'd just say, good illuminating conversation. And what ended up coming from that is, you know, the agreement that when you are looking and working with people, if we all understand basic laws and basic foundations and so forth, it doesn't mean you have to like them, but you have to comply to them. You have to work within the lines. When you drive to work tomorrow, when you go somewhere in your car, you have to comply with the standards of society, which means you drive between the lines, you try not to hit people, and if possible, be as courteous as possible so that you don't have to deal with a bunch of stress and you don't have to deal with a bunch of jerks. You know, I know everybody's a jerk when you're driving, right? I get it. This is your lane. Get out of your way. I understand. But I'm here to tell you that compliance is necessary. If we comply, if we live by the laws, then we can work out and we don't have to get ourselves into harm's way. Had our federal government complied, we wouldn't be dealing with a global communism being the true threat. And a lot of people are going to end up dying if they win. And that's a scientific thing. If you look at every time they have won, the communists have won, massive people have died because that's how they operate. They don't care. And if you understand that, then the greatest thing that we can do to save millions, probably billions of lives, because there are multiple billions here on the earth, the best thing that we can do to save that many lives is to obtain compliance. And it starts with the federal government. Then we can work with the states and we can work with all the other states. You got to understand that all the other states in the world are just states, just like California, just like Delaware. If you look at China, China is a state. They are equal to Delaware. Yeah, that's right. Because Delaware is a sovereign state just like China. The difference is that we have formed a union and we have delegated very specific powers to a general government to serve us. And those powers are enumerated. And so if we are going to survive as a republic, we have to have compliance to the Constitution. If not, they'll continue to make it up as they go along, and they'll continue to do whatever they think necessary and proper, and that will be to our demise, because they have already the deep state is already gone amok. And you can see how many problems have been listed from all of this unconstitutional noncompliance. So what we've been doing, and last week we talked about Madison and Monroe, and we started talking about, or in our last few episodes, try not to reference some week bound and so forth, in our last few episodes, we have tried to dig into the vetoes of the Department of Transportation by three presidents. First, we started with Madison, then we started with Monroe, and then we went into Andrew Jackson. So we're right there with Andrew Jackson at this point in time. But clearly, with Madison, Madison actually withheld his signature. He actually said, no, I cannot in any good conscience. And actually, I think what he says is, I feel in reconciling the bill with the Constitution of the United States to return it with that objection to the House of Representatives in which it oriented. Because, bottom line, he recognized that the powers did not exist. Because he says here, the legislative powers vested in Congress are specified and enumerated in the 8th section of the first article of the Constitution. It does not appear that the power possessed to be exercised by the bill is among the enumerated powers. So in this conversation with this leader in the Constitution Party, I clearly, you know, we're talking about Republic Review. We're talking about what, you know, how this goes forward. And I was saying that this is really an easy process. If the power is in the enumerated powers that the federal government is executing, then there you go. But if it is not, if there is no link to the states delegating that power, and you can't make a, not even implied, it has to be a direct link, because remember, Madison said he could not find it, but it wasn't just with Madison, right? What Monroe said is because he actually goes through the first and the second, and according to my, he goes through all six of these justifications that Congress said that they needed to create this power. And Monroe says this: according to my judgment, it cannot be derived from either of those powers, nor from all of them united. And in consequence, it does not exist in creating the Department of Transportation. Now, we clearly understand that the powers delegated to the federal government allows the federal government to create post roads, roads that will lead from the state capitals to the seat of government for the national or the general government, Washington, D.C. So in other words, they can't do anything other than provide and help support those roads to the federal government or to Washington, D.C. So now we're getting into Andrew Jackson, and so let me kind of finish up this warm-up, and we'll dive back into where we were with Andrew Jackson. So we'll be right back after these two promos, and I know you're going to love this, so we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the audit process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
So clearly, Monroe even identified the fact that there was no link in the Constitution to create a Department of Transportation. The second time Congress had attempted this. The third time was with Andrew Jackson. Now, obviously, I forgot to go through some obligatory. So one of the things you already know is that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you probably know that we have a call-in line. If you, it's not for comment, it's a listen line. And if you want to call in to the listen line, 605 562-4209. Then you will be able to listen to this entire show without having to worry about data streaming or anything else. I get it that things aren't getting cheaper. So this is obviously it's not a toll-free call, but most everybody has unlimited long distance. And so go ahead and dial South Dakota, 605-562-4209. I also want to let you know that if you want to contribute, if you want to help us get this word into the faces in the most appropriate settings possible, at the state legislator meetings as well as other leadership meetings, we've got to travel. And so we need your help in doing that. We're not looking to line our pockets. We make no money. We're just trying to not subsidize the war. So if you want to help, then why don't you go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and click on our link to our GoFundMe crowdfunding campaign. That way you can actually throw a few dollars to help cover our cost. I haven't even put the second trip on there just because we haven't even come close to making money for the first trip for reimbursement. We're just going into the hole. And there's a lot of people that would say, well, you're on a fool's errand if you keep on doing this and nobody pays. And I'm going, well, it's not foolish to save the Constitution. Even if I'm the last person, even if I'm Lot in Sodom and Gomorrah, I will try to save the Constitution. And I know that there's other people working with me. Bottom line is, we need your help. We need you to be working with us as well. If you haven't watched some of the videos, you need to just go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, go through the Take Action page, look at the videos, look at the content that we have, and share that with other people. If you want to also support this show without actually losing anything, where you get something, a quid pro quo, you should be trying Red State Coffee. That link is also on the reclaimingtherepublic.org website. So if you go there, then you should be able to go to the eBay page where you can actually buy Red State Coffee. Go get yourself a bag and try it. Call us up and let us know what you think. 425-270-5416. We only ask for you to give us a 10, 15-second review. You love it, you hate it, what have you. You'll never do it again, whatever. Please give us that review. That way we can actually, you know, provide the feedback as well as use you, because we're pretty confident that you're going to be pretty happy with the coffee. And so we believe that you would be our better salesperson than just myself. So anyway, one of the things we're going to get into when we're done with the vetoing process of the three times that Congress tried to create a Department of Transportation, we're going to get into the cod fisheries and bounties, where in an official capacity, Madison clarifies to Congress as he speaks and testifies to Congress on the floor of Congress, or in the floor of the House of Representatives, what the limitations to the General Welfare Clause are. Why are these things important, my friends? Because these are official documents that were done in the official capacity of these great men. In other words, they absolutely assent, if you believe in some form of precedence, these are the precedents that actually point to the fact that the only way the federal government was able to get any new power was through the amendment process. That's it. No other way around it. And so let us move forward now that I've done most all the obligatories, other than the fact that it happens to be Constitution Week, right? Let me see here. No, actually, we're a week away. That's right. We've got one more week for Constitution Day. Actually, it's a week from tomorrow. So I'm hoping that you have plans in at least reading the Constitution with us. We will be reading the Constitution, and we hope that you join us, because this is the best time spent in familiarizing yourself with the Constitution. It won't take too long. I'll try not to editorialize too much, but what I'll do is I will go through the portion, or I should say the Constitution Society's version of the Constitution that has been marked with the violations, what has been violated, what hasn't been. So we can kind of talk about how badly the Constitution has been violated. Anyway, Mr. Andrew Jackson, President Andrew Jackson at the time, talks about why he's not going to approve. He kind of says that he would like to, but he goes on, and so we're at the point where he actually brings up Jefferson's administration, and this is what he says. In the administration of Mr. Jefferson, we have two examples of the exercise of the right of appropriation, which is the considerations that led to their adoption and in their effects upon the public. Mine have had a greater agency in marking the character of the power than any subsequent events. I allude to the payment of $15 million for the purchase of Louisiana and to the original appropriation for the construction of the Cumberland Road. The latter act, deriving much weight from the acquiescence and the approbation of three of the most powerful of the original members of the Confederacy, expressed through their respective legislatures, although the circumstances of the latter case may be such as to deprive so much as it relates to the actual construction of the road of the force of obligatory exposition of the Constitution, it must nevertheless be admitted that so far as the mere approbation of money is concerned, they present the principle in its most imposing aspect. No less than 23 different laws have been passed through all the forms of the Constitution, approbating upward of $2.5 million out of the national treasury in support of that improvement, with the approbation of every president of the United States, including my predecessor, since its commencement. Independently of the sanction given to the approbations of the Cumberland, and so let me stop here. He mentions the Louisiana purchase, and then he starts talking about the Cumberland Road, which at that point in time, because we had just purchased this, and actually this purchase wasn't necessarily just a purchase. It wasn't somebody that just threw money out and bought it from, like what Trump's trying to do with Greenland, actually just trying to outright buy it. What ended up happening was Monroe himself was the one that brought back the deal that gave us the Louisiana Territory, which gave us the Louisiana, what they call the purchase. But what it was a treaty with France. And in doing so, by passing that treaty with 2/3 of the House of the Senate, that treaty and that sale was approved. So it wasn't just somebody going to the store to buy something because they had that. They expanded the Republic in a very significant way by going out and creating a treaty that says, we will give you this much if you give us this much. And so even though it was a transaction, it was a constitutional transaction at that. Now, once they had passed the Louisiana Purchase, the Cumberland Road was necessary for them to explore and get out and start opening up the West, because possession is 9/10 of the law. At least the framers understood in the terms of conquest, if you don't have forts, if you don't have a way of occupying the territory, then somebody's going to come right along and steal it from you, like maybe Mexico or somebody else. And so, because that's how the laws of nations worked back then. Anyway, so he's talking about a lot of money being spent by the federal government and his predecessors and presidents. And he was basically saying about $2.5 million have come out of the treasury to support that type of improvement. And then he goes on and says this: independently of the sanction given to the approbations for the Cumberland and other roads and objects under this power, the administration of Mr. Madison was characterized by an act which furnishes the strongest evidence of his opinion of its extent. A bill was passed through both houses of Congress and presented for his approval, setting apart and pledging certain funds for constructing roads and canals and improving the navigation of watercourses in order to facilitate, promote, and give security to the internal commerce among the several states, and to render more easy and less expensive the means and provisions for the common defense. Regarding the bill as asserting a power in the federal government, we have ran out of time with this segment. So I know exactly where we left off, and we will leave. We'll come back with the regarding the bill as asserting a power right after these two promos. So please stay tuned, and we're going to hear what he has to say about what Madison said. So we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so President Jackson just basically read the top end of the bill that was presented to Mr. Madison. And now he's going to elucidate in his veto bill back to Congress what he, Mr. Madison, said to Congress at the time. And he says, regarding the bill as asserting a power in the federal government to construct roads and canals within the limits of the states in which they were made, he objected to its passage on the ground of its unconstitutionality, declaring that the assent of the respective states in the mode provided by the bill could not confer the power in question, that the only cases in which consent and secession of particular states can extend the power of Congress are those specified, provided in the Constitution, and superadding to those avowals his opinion that a restriction of the power to provide for the common defense and general welfare to cases which are to be provided for by the expenditure of money would still leave within the legislative power all the great and most important measures, government being the ordinary and necessary means of carrying them into execution. Now, this is where he kind of steps out from what he was going to say. And what this is what Jackson's comments, because that was a closing of a quote. them into execution, close quote from Mr. Madison. I have not been able to consider these declarations in any other point of view than a concession of the right of appropriation is not limited by the power to carry into effect the measure for which the money is asked. As was formerly contended, the views of Mr. Monroe upon this subject were not left to inference. During his administration, a bill was passed through both houses of Congress conferring the jurisdiction and prescribing the mode by which the federal government should exercise it in the case of the Cumberland Road. He returned it with objections to its passages and, in assigning them, took occasion to say that in the early stages of the government, he had inclined to the construction that it had no right to expend money except in the performance of acts authorized by the specific grants of powers according to a strict construction of them, but that on further reflection and observations, his mind had undergone a change, that his opinion was that Congress have an unlimited power to raise money, and that in its appropriation, they have a discretionary power restricted only by the duty to appropriate it to purposes of common defense and of the general, not local, national, not state benefit. And this was avowed by the governing principle through the residue of his administration. The views of the last administration are of such recent date as to render a particular reference to them unnecessary. Now, I've already read why Monroe declared that they couldn't. Okay, so there was a little latitude and there was no quoting here, other than this was the only quote that he made, that Congress have an unlimited power to raise the discretionary powers, but that's nowhere in the veto that I had read to you from Monroe regarding their ability to actually create a Department of Transportation. So there was a little bit of latitude that Mr. Jackson threw out. And I'm sure he was citing something else, but he's trying to create an association between his veto of the Department of Transportation and his look down the road and trying to spend money on something else. And so anyway, the views of the last administration, which is whose? John Quincy Adams, are of such recent date as to render a particular reference to them unnecessary. It is well known that the appropriating power to the utmost extent which had been claimed for it in relation to internal improvements was fully recognized and exercised by it. This brief reference to known facts will be sufficient to show the difficulty, if not the impracticability, of bringing back the operations of the government to the construction of the Constitution set up in 1798. Now, if I understand what happened in 1798, well, 1798 was when Jefferson and Madison made the resolutions to basically stop the federal government from breaching the Constitution. And so I'm kind of at a loss of what he's referring to in 1798. I'll repeat. This brief reference to known facts will be sufficient to show the difficulty, if not impracticability, of bringing back the operations of the government to the construction of the Constitution set up in 1798, assuming that to be its true reading in relation to the power under construction, thus giving an admonitory proof of the force of implication and the necessity of guarding the Constitution with sleepless vigilance against the authority of precedents which have not the sanction of its most plainly defined powers. For although it is the duty of all to look to that sacred instrument instead of the statute book to repudiate at all times encroachments upon its spirit, which are to apt to be affected by the conjuncture of peculiar and facilitating circumstances. It is not less true that the public good and the nature of our political institutions require that individual differences should yield to a well-settled acquiescence of the people and confederated authorities in particular constructions of the Constitution on doubtful points. Not to concede this much to the spirit of our institutions would impair their stability and defeat the objects of the Constitution itself. Now, I'm going to take a quick break here. First off, we're on page 4 of 9 pages, so we're almost halfway through. I told you he was very wordy with what he had to say. More importantly, one of the things that it's kind of interesting because I feel like he's working this all up to talk out of both sides of his mouth. What he is talking here, though, is talking about an undying, unfeigned, and undaunted spirit of guarding the Constitution as it was understood and as it was sold to the states. Now, Andrew Jackson was not one of those guys that was around during the ratification debate, so he was not there, and unfortunately, he was not taught, nor did he read the ratification debates as to how the Constitution was sold. That is the most important understanding in the possession of the framers, period. And as Madison alluded to this in his letter to John G. Jackson, he said it didn't matter how he thought the Constitution was understood. It only matters to the states at the time of ratification, how it was told to them, what this meant, what this meant, and what this meant. And that's what it is supposed to mean, because that's what they were told. In contract law, that's how it goes. However the contract was sold, to wit, by verbatim of the words that were provided in explaining and elucidating and clarifying what every word in that Constitution meant, that is, as far as I'm concerned, that's all that really counts. It doesn't matter. What he's doing right here is actually going in... it's departing, but he's not paralleling. He's actually going perpendicular. He is jetting out in the wrong direction. He is creating a course of saying, well, this is what all the others have done. Not once did he say that the states have this understanding of the Constitution in a very particular way. And so he, like I said, some of these things that I see in what Andrew Jackson was trying to do was trying to establish this concept of precedence and almost setting up case law, which the Supreme Court was already working to do. And so moving forward, let me get back to this, the point here. The bill before me does not call for a more definitive opinion upon the particular circumstances which will warrant appropriations of money by Congress to aid works of internal improvement. For although the extension of the power to apply money beyond that of carrying into effect the object for which it is appropriated has, as we have seen, been long claimed and exercised by the federal government, yet such grants have always been professedly under the control of the general principle that works which might be thus aided should be, quote, of a general, not a local, national, or state character, close quote. A disregard of this distinction would be of necessity. So he's kind of taking what Monroe stated in some official capacity, possibly, but he's quoting Monroe here and saying that they can do these things, you know, as long as they, you know, have this general, not local, national, or state character. So anyway, he goes on and says, a disregard of this distinction would be of necessity lead to the subversion of the federal system. That even this is an unsafe one, arbitrary in its nature and liability. And we've already ran out of time for this segment. So We will get back to this, because how Andrew Jackson perceives this and what he garners out of this actually helps support these other two men and the principles of the ratification and how the states understood the Constitution. So with that, we're going to be right back after these two promos. So stand by. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so right back to where we were. I'm going to repeat the last comment before we got so rudely interrupted. A disregard of this distinction would be of necessity lead to the subversion of the federal system. That even this is an unsafe one, arbitrary in its nature, and liable, consequently, to great abuses, is too obvious to require the confirmation of experience. It is, however, sufficiently definite and imperative to my mind to forbid my approbation of any bill having the character of the one under consideration. I have given to its provision all the reflection demanded by a just regard for the interests of those of our fellow citizens who have desired its passage, and by the respect which is due to a coordinate branch of the government, but I am not able to view it in any other light than as a measure of purely local character, or if it be considered national, that no further distinction between the approbation duties of the general and state governments be attempted. For there can be no local interest that may not, with equal propriety, be denominated national. It has no connection with any established system of improvements, is exclusively within the limits of a state, starting at a point of the Ohio River and running out 60 miles to an interior town, and even as far as the state is interested, conferring partial instead of general advantages. Considering the magnitude and importance of the power and the embarrassments to which, from the very nature of the thing, its exercise must necessarily be subjected, The real friends of internal improvements ought not to be willing to confide it to accident and chance. What is the proper national in its character or otherwise in an inquiry, which is often extremely difficult of solution, the approbations of 1 year for an object which is considered national may be rendered nugatory by the refusal of the seceding Congress to continue to work on the ground that it is local. No aid can be derived from the intervention of corporations. The question regards the character of the work, not that of those by whom it is to be accomplished. Notwithstanding the union of the government with the corporation by those immediate agency, any work of internal improvement is carried on, the inquiry will still remain. Is it national and conducive to the benefit of the whole, or local and operating only to the advantage of the portion of the union? Now, I'm going to just take a quick tangent here and say, it doesn't matter. Is it in the Constitution or not? Because I can tell you several times Mr. Iredell said this, Mr. Nicholas said this, Mr. Pendleton said this, Mr. Madison said this, and even Mr. Marshall said this, that if it is not in the Constitution, it has no jurisdiction in doing it. It doesn't matter whether you consider it of national benefit or whether it is a state and local benefit. That is not the litmus test to whether we apply approbation or whether we appropriate funds via taxes to, you know, give out to different states and different companies to build roads and or highways, waterways, and so forth. Bottom line is, if it is not an enumerated power, then they have no reason meddling with it, as Mr. Nicholas said in the Virginia ratification debates. But I continue, and Mr. Andrew Jackson continues by saying, but although I might not feel it to be my official duty to interpose the executive veto to the passage of a bill appropriating money for the construction of such works as are authorized by the states are national in character, I do not wish to be understood as expressing an opinion that it is expedient at this time for the general government to embark in a system of this kind, and anxious that my constituents should be possessed of my views on this as well as all other subjects which they have committed to my discretion. I shall state them frankly and briefly. Besides my minor considerations, there are two prominent views of the subject which have made a very deep impression upon my mind, which I think are well entitled to your serious attention. From the official communication submitted to you, it appears that if no adverse and unseen contingency happens in our foreign relations, and no unusual diversion be made of the funds set apart for the payment of the national debt, we may look with confidence to its entire extinguishment in the short period of 4 years. The extent to which this pleasing anticipation is dependent upon the policy which may be pursued in relation to the measures of the character of the one now under construction must be obvious to all, and equally so that the events of the present session are well calculated to awaken public solicitude upon the subject. By the statement from the Treasury Department and those from the clerks of the Senate and the House of Representatives herewith submitted, it appears that the bills which have passed into laws and those which are all probability will pass before the adjournment of Congress anticipate appropriations which, with the ordinary expenditures of the support of government, will exceed considerably the amount in the Treasury for the year 1830. Thus, whilst we are diminishing the revenue by a reduction of the duties of tea, coffee, and cocoa, see, they were taxing tea, coffee, and cocoa, and we fought a revolution over that, the appropriations for internal improvements are increasing beyond the available means of the Treasury. And if to this calculation be added the amounts contained in bills which are pending before the two houses, it may be safely affirmed that $10 million would not make up the excess over the Treasury receipts unless the payment of the national debt be postponed and the means now pledged to that object applied to those enumerated in the bill, in these bills that he just spoke of. Without a regulated system of internal improvements, this exhausting mode of approbation or appropriation is not likely to be avoided, and the plain consequence, which must be either a continuance of the national debt or a resort to additional taxes. Oh, so see what he's doing? He's not even talking about whether this truly is an enumerated power, as Monroe and as Andrew Jackson. He's talking about the way they kind of have been functioning and the rule of thumb that they started arbitrarily applying. And so he's clearly stating, he only regurgitated what Madison stated. And so moving on, he says, although many of the states with a laudable zeal and under the influence of an enlightened policy are successfully applying their separate efforts to works of this character, the desire to enlist the aid of the general government in the construction of such as from their nature ought to devolve upon it, and to which the means of the individual states are inadequate, is both rational and patriotic, and if that desire is not gratified, now it does not follow that it never will be. Whatever. The general intelligence and spirit and public spirit of the American people furnish a sure guarantee that at the proper time, this policy will be made to prevail under circumstances more auspicious to its successful prosecution than those which now exist. But great as this object undoubtedly is, it is not the only one which demands the fostering care of the government. The preservation and success of the Republican principle rest with us to elevate its character and extend its influence, rank among our most important duties, and the best means to accomplish this desirable end are those which will rivet the attachment to our citizens to the government by their choice, by the comparative lightness of their public burthens, and by the attraction which the superior success of its operations will present to the admiration and respect of the world. So it seems to me he's basically stating that as long as we make everybody happy, then we're good. But clearly, he pointed out that the states, even if they acquiesce to this mode and what they're trying to do, because it's still not an enumerated power. I mean, he clearly regurgitated what Madison said, but he's going down this path of saying, well, as long as this means that we're doing these things for a good purpose, well, we still have a lot to go through. Like I said, he was a blowhard, and so he went on and rambled a lot. We're going to cover this, though, because these are very critical things that he has to say. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help, and this is why we're reading these things for you. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am
trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.